Today's broadcast is made possible by Carle Foundation Hospital. Carle Foundation Hospital provided more than $80 million in community benefit last year, including almost $10 million in free or discounted care. More information about how Carle embraces its charitable mission is in its annual report at carle.org.
It's 2:40. In sports this afternoon, Denver clinched a berth in the NBA playoffs with a 111-104 victory over the New York Knicks. The Nuggets also moved a half game ahead of San Antonio and Houston in the race for the second seed in the Western Conference. The Spurs lost to Oklahoma City 96-95, while the Rockets enjoyed a night off. Wins by Florida and Montreal knocked Toronto and Ottawa out of the Eastern Conference playoff picture. The Panthers beat Ottawa 5-2, setting the Senators up for elimination when the Canadiens topped Chicago 4-1. That victory also took out the Maple Leafs. The St. Louis Blues visit the Chicago Blackhawks for the last time in the regular season tonight. St. Louis is in the mix for its first playoff berth since 2004. The Blues are 4-0-1 against the Hawks this season. And Purdue has been knocked out of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. Courtney Paris had 19 points last night to lead Oklahoma over the Boilermakers 74-68 in a regional final, while Penn State has eliminated Notre Dame from the men's NIT semifinals. The score in that game last night, 67-59. That's sports.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Coming April 14th, experience the National Philharmonic of Russia with featured soloist Demos Matsuyev. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com.
WILL-TV shut off its analog television signal at 6 a.m. yesterday. If you're having trouble receiving the WILL-TV digital signal, please call us at 217-333-7300. We have extra staff available to help answer your questions today. Again, that phone number, 217-333-7300. Thank you. Well, some scientists are asking citizens to pay attention to plants this spring. They're interested in everything from leaf buds to blossoms. The observations from our backyards could help them better understand how climate change is affecting plants. Sadie Babbitts has volunteered.
You know, I found it really isn't hard to be a citizen scientist. I'm on the website for Project Budburst. It's a nationwide effort to get people out into their backyards to track spring flowers. All I have to do is pick a plant or a tree to keep an eye on and then report my findings. I'm thinking I'll check out the lilac trees in my neighborhood here in Portland. But before I head out, I need some advice. So I called Sandra Henderson. She's busy these days directing Project Budburst at the University Corporation of Atmospheric Research. I reach Henderson at her office in Boulder, Colorado.
What advice do you have for me, a first-time citizen scientist observing phenology?
The ideal thing to do is get a sense of when lilacs, in your case in Portland, Oregon, are expected to have different pheno events.
Good thing I looked up phenology before calling Henderson. Basically, it means nature's calendar. The timing of when cherry blossoms bloom or a robin builds a nest. And these life cycles of plants and animals are sensitive to changes in climate.
Plants provide a wonderful context for understanding changes to the environment. And certainly they respond to changes in temperature and precipitation, things that climate scientists are very interested in.
Scientists can't be in everyone's backyard to note whether a daffodil is blooming a week earlier than it normally does. That's where volunteers come in. Last year, some 5,000 people across the country reported their observations to Project Budburst. That information now is a foundation for an online database that includes everything from dandelions to ponderosa pines. So after walking through a neighborhood and seeing a lot of trees that have already flowered, I've decided that these lilac trees outside of our house are perfect for watching because they haven't flowered yet and there are leaf buds all over the branches. And here's a branch and the leaf buds are huge and they are just starting to unfurl. Now that I found my lilac tree to watch, I can report today's findings. Once I submitted my first observation, it actually popped up on a live Google map, and it's pretty neat. I can see that map now, and there are little balloons all across the country. Those are people just like me who've reported their observations this spring. Studying the timing of spring isn't new. In Japan and China, for example, the blossoming of cherry and peach trees signal the start of festivals that go back more than 1,000 years. Cherry trees in Japan now bloom 4 days earlier than in the 1950s. Sandra Henderson with Project Budverse says this program has only been going for a couple of years, but scientists have noticed a few changes.
For example, last year in the Chicago area, we had a number of forsythia first flower reported a couple of days in April. When we went back and looked at the same data, the same plant species, the same location in 2007, we noticed it was a week later.
These simple observations will eventually create a snapshot of how climate change is affecting plants across the U.S. Scientists can then use this information to help us better understand and adapt to a changing climate. For the Environment Report, I'm Sadie Babbitts.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Park Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
It's 2:47. Reforming Illinois government was a hot topic shortly after former Governor Rob Blagojevich was removed from office. For 2 months, two separate reform panels have considered changes to various ethics laws, but there appears to be some dispute as how to proceed. Todd Fuhrer reports.
Governor Pat Quinn's first official act after taking office was creating the Illinois Reform Commission. It's a group of state government outsiders who have been considering a number of ethics reforms, from campaign finance limits to overhauling the state's contracting rules. Not to be outdone, the legislature also formed its own joint committee on government reform to look at ethics and campaign finance issues. On the day the governor's panel released its first series of recommendations, it was obvious some of their ideas will meet resistance with lawmakers. One of the less prominent proposals on their list was to extend the state's so-called pay-to-play ban. State law already prohibits constitutional officers from taking campaign contributions from major state contractors. The Illinois Reform Commission says the ban should also extend to lawmakers. But House Democratic Leader Barbara Flynn Curry says that idea doesn't make sense because lawmakers do not award state contracts.
So are we playing some kind of PR game here? Did these members of this commission have a clue what they were talking about?
Lawmakers have repeatedly resisted efforts to limit the campaign contributions they receive. Patrick Collins, the former federal prosecutor who chairs the Illinois Reform Commission, says it may be technically correct that lawmakers don't sign off on government contracts, but he says he knows from personal experience they weigh in on who gets state business.
Well, there's authority and then there's authority. There is my experience, again, I'm no babe in the woods on this one. Legislators do weigh in on contracts with state agencies.
Collins was the lead prosecutor in the conviction of former Governor George Ryan on corruption charges. He says with the expected indictment of Ryan's successor, Rod Blagojevich, on similar charges, it's time Illinois takes a serious look at major campaign finance reform. His commission is also recommending the state adopt similar campaign finance limits as the federal government, but similar attempts in the past have failed. For those serving in the General Assembly, it's all about self-preservation. In other words, winning re-election. Top Democrats say there are fears campaign contribution limits would put some candidates at a disadvantage. They argue millionaires could fund a campaign out of their own pockets, and limiting how much others could raise would force candidates who aren't wealthy to work harder to get donations or risk being outspent on the campaign trail. So the question is, will efforts to pass real ethics reform stall because lawmakers and members of the governor's reform panel have different priorities? Steve Brown is a spokesman for House Speaker Mike Madigan. Brown says the two panels may disagree on how reform will work, but both groups are working toward the same goal.
I think probably 95% of what comes out will be the topics that both groups have talked about. There may be some insignificant differences about how they get to the point, how they get to the conclusion.
Lawmakers in the governor's office may be taking a closer look at reform than has been done in recent years, but government watchdogs are holding their applause. Dave Lundy is acting executive director of the Better Government Association. He says it's too soon to say if lawmakers are serious about reform in the post-Blagojevich era or if they'll simply drag their feet.
We have to judge the legislature and the legislative leaders by their actions. And if we get to a point 15 months from now, 16 months from now, where you do not have campaign finance reform, you do not have increased transparency, you do not have pension reforms, then guess what? We haven't succeeded. But until the legislature has an opportunity to act, we're not going to prejudge them.
Lundy says it will take a strong and consistent effort by reform groups and average citizens to pressure lawmakers into changing the system. Both reform panels say they will keep working on ethics issues. Governor Quinn says he wants lawmakers to have a major ethics package on his desk by the end of the legislative session in May. He stopped short of endorsing the measures proposed by the panel he put together, but he says it's a good blueprint. With competing efforts at reform, negotiations will be needed. Before supporters of change can get Illinois' House in order, they'll have to overcome what is now a House divided when it comes to ethics laws. I'm Todd Fuhrer.
It's 2:51. In this portion of the program, we were scheduled to talk with photographer Brian Peterson about close-up photography. He's not available at the moment, so what we'll do is we'll reschedule that interview. And in the meantime, we'll have a rebroadcast this afternoon of the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 1st of April, 2009. It's the birthday of the novelist Francine Prose, born Brooklyn, 1947. Her parents were both doctors. Her father once let her watch an autopsy at Bellevue Hospital in New York City. Went off to college and afterward tried working on an autobiographical novel. Didn't go anywhere. And then her boyfriend won a fellowship to travel abroad, and she persuaded him to take her to Bombay. And when she was living there, she started to read Proust and Dostoevsky and Isaac Dinesen, which inspired her to write Judah the Pious, a novel based on Hasidic folklore about a rabbi who tries to convince the king of Poland to reinstate Jewish burial rituals, which got great reviews, and Francine Prose decided that travel was the key to writing good fiction. Spent the next several years living out of a suitcase, hitchhiking to Mexico, working on her novels, went on to publish many strange and fantastical books such as Hungry Hearts, about a star of the Yiddish theater who becomes possessed by one of her roles, and Bigfoot Dreams, about a reporter for a tabloid newspaper who invents a story that comes true. It's the birthday of the composer and pianist Sergei Rachmaninoff, born in Novgorod, Russia, in 1873. Escaped just before the Russian Revolution, spent most of the rest of his life in the United States. When he met the pianist Vladimir Horowitz, the two pianists sealed their friendship by going down into the basement of Steinway & Sons on 57th Street in New York and playing Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto, Horowitz playing the solo part on one piano, Rachmaninoff the orchestral reduction. Today is April Fool's Day, and it was on this day in 2004 that Google released Gmail to the public, which many people thought was an April Fool's joke because they offered a whole gigabyte of storage, which was exponentially greater than what was offered by other free email services at the time. And so Gmail has played a number of pranks every April Fool's Day. Last year, users signing into their Gmail account on April Fool's Day saw a banner offering custom time, which supposedly allowed users to predate some of their outgoing email messages. 3 years ago, it was Google Romance, which said, when you think about it, love is just another search problem. Here are two poems for today, two little poems by Hal Sirovitz. Choice of Diseases. Now that I'm sick and have all this time to contemplate the meaning of the universe, Father said, I understand why I never did it before. Nothing looks good from a prone position. You have to walk around to appreciate things. Once I get better, I don't intend to get sick for a while. But if I do, I hope I get one of those diseases you can walk around with. And correcting an unbalance. I never listen to commercials, Father said. They're aimed at trying to sell me something I don't need. If I do need it, I want to know that the need originated from me and not from others. I don't want to end up with lots of junk I'm only going to throw out. Half the things in this house aren't used. We only really need food, clothing, shelter, and, of course, each other. You do need me, don't you? Your mother never gives me much opportunity to talk. I'm supposed to listen. I'm able to talk to you, but it'd please me if you said something once in a while. Two poems by Hal Sirovitz from his collection Father Said, published by Soft Skull Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts and Poetry Out Loud, a national recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Margaret Bain. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Earth and sky.
Plants are what connect humankind to the sun and the ultimate source of energy. But not every plant is adapted ideally for us and for the world in which we live.
You're listening to Harvard chemist George Whitesides. He's talking about how nanotechnology can improve our understanding of plants and ultimately agriculture.
So with plants, there are an enormous range of very important and interesting problems to be solved, from perhaps improving the efficiency of photosynthesis to improving food quality.
To understand a plant at the very small nanoscale, said Whitesides, one should look inside the plant's cells.
A cell is not an empty bag, but a very, very crowded environment with many complicated molecular machines, that is, collections of molecules that perform the business of the cell.
Whitesides said he was humbled by this complexity.
Take the simplest plant and ask how on earth it could be that a relatively simple genome, usually somewhat smaller than ours, can instruct cells to become leaves and stems and flowers. And the honest answer is we don't know. We don't really know what life is.
Our thanks today to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Research Initiative Program, and Cornell University. We're Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programs are made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose initiative on immigration, history, and policy presents Global Economic Change and Migration of Asian Women, What Are the Issues? By Jean Pyle on Monday, April 6th at noon at the Center for Advanced Study, 912 West.